Hey everybody, my name is Jesse Collings, and I am the host of the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, a show right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. On the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, we take a deep look at individual issues and stories that are going on in the wrestling world. Each episode is about a different topic, and we take a thorough and educated look at things ranging from current booking trends to breakdowns of individual performers and angles to investigations into different fan cultures across the industry. In addition, we keep a close eye on the wrestling media, and as a professional journalist, I bring a unique perspective to how current issues in wrestling are being covered and discussed through the wrestling media. We have a revolving series of guests from across wrestling punditry joining us on each episode, and we hope that you make the choice to give us a listen on wherever you get your podcast from.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Super J-Cast. I'm Joel, and joined by Damon McDonald. It is Wednesday, 21st of January, 2026. This is episode 396. Damon, how are we doing?
5% of the year are gone already, Joel. I don't know if you know that. 5%.
We're past the most depressing week of the year, aren't we? That was last week, I heard.
I love winter, man. I'm sorry. And supposedly this weekend we're going to get potatoed with some snow. They're expecting anywhere from several inches to feet of snow. So we're going to get it handed to us. We're going to get a fist right in the butt with the snow monsters. I don't know what that meant. Yeah, but I like winter. I do. I prefer it over the summer any day of the week.
It's shit here. It's all gray and cold and rainy, and I don't like it. I want it to stop.
All right, listen. You live in fucking paradise. You know, take a little bit of bad weather.
Yes, it appeared to be paradise when you visit over the summer. But
it was.
Winter was absolute hell.
You know what the best part was the morning when we went out on your back deck patio area and overlooking the wonderful scenery and that little breeze that was coming. Oh, fucking heaven. Lovely. Lovely. But yeah, it's like it's freezing fucking cold right now. It's like single digits outside right now. And yeah, we're going to get hit with some fucking snow. All right, this weather report brought to you by Verizon.
This is what people are tuned in to hear. They want to hear our hot takes about the weather.
Yeah,
what does 3 days before British winters? Tune in to find out. Yeah. $10, please.
Dig in your wallet, meteorology buffs. Weather watchers. I hate people who get so fucking panicky over snow. It's like you're not going to starve to death, number one. Number two, you'll be out of your driveway by like an hour or two. Like, fucking relax, people. People go into a fucking panic. Like they're aliens falling from the fucking sky. It's snow. You've seen it last year. Read the fuck lax.
Yes, that also grinds my gears.
You know what else? I don't like people on my lawn. I don't like that either. We're two old fucks talking about weather. But we have news. We have lots to talk about today because as Joe likes to say, if you got your fucking wallet out already, you know. We'll give you as much details as we can, but a lot of shaking going on in the world of New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Yes, $10 subscribers would have enjoyed me and Jay Michael having a little fireside chat about the state of New Japan as we talk through his New Japan primer. So, if you want some bonus audio content, it's a $10 feed, but it's the $5 feed which is red hot. It's white hot today, Damon. It's popping off with delicious, juicy bits of pastrami all over the shop. And if you're listening to this live on YouTube, or if you're listening to the Patreon early upload of this, then you would already know this information. But I think we're just going to discuss it openly with the assumption that it's going to break containment at some point, because I've already seen Sean Ross Sapp doing little GIF quote tweets about stuff related to this. So I think it's going to come out sooner or later. But we were first. That's the important thing.
Yeah, I mean, it is. Now, I will say this. So we were first to make it official, but I believe Sean put out something like the first week of something, like hinting that it might be a possibility, but
he did.
Here we go.
But to be fair, right? So we're talking about Evil, basically, and Evil does that every year. So what we have been told, just to get straight to the point, shall we? We have been told that Evil is done. Finished with New Japan. His last match was yesterday, the show on January 20th. And he's headed for WWE to join his partner, his Io Sky, and that's that. Which, like, what was your initial reaction to that, David, when you heard?
A bit surprising. I mean, I know that there was little rumbles, little things that had kind of.
I'd heard that he had been going. He'd been saying goodbye to everyone, but everyone just assumed that he was just taking the same early year break that he had done last year. I don't know if he'd done that the year before that, but nobody was saying to me, oh yeah, he's gone.
Right. So waking up to that news was a bit shocking. And then that was followed up with more texts and conversation about a litany of people who will be saying goodbye in the very near future to New Japan Pro Wrestling. That's where you come in, Joel. And you say,
yes. what do I say? To you.
I'm giving it to you. I'm giving you the ball to spill the beans, if you will.
Sorry, I got distracted because now Brian Alvarez and Wrestling Observer Newsletter are talking about this as well. So,
that right?
We got carte blanche to talk about it. So, well done those people who are smart enough to pony up the $5, because you would have heard this way before anyone else did.
Big Bri give us any credit?
I don't know. I'm just looking at a tweet here. There's not really much detail in it.
Okay. Well, where should we start? Which name should we start with first?
Well, let's talk about Evil first.
All right.
I know a lot of Western fans are going to be popping out the champagne for this one because they don't like Evil. They don't like House of Torture. I don't necessarily think this means House of Torture is going away. I think more than likely that they just pass leadership to someone else, whether, maybe it's Doki, they've positioned him as this god of the junior division. Could be him, could have a junior lead in. But I don't think this necessarily means House of Torture is going anywhere. But it's just, for me personally, I think this is a loss for New Japan. I think Evil, whilst you might not like the way he's been booked, he is a consummate professional. And he was there, at the end of the day, to put people over and make other people look good. And he was fucking great at that, as we outlined for our Wrestle Kingdom review. It was an absolute masterclass the way he put over Aaron Wolf. So to lose someone who is that selfless and that professional, that's a shame, right? That's a loss. All rosters need someone like Evil. And on another note, I was hoping that at some point we would get the redemption arc for him, where he turns babyface and rejects House of Torture and does all that. But this is the nature of the beast, isn't it? Like, when guys leave the company, you don't always get them having done everything you wanted them to do.
Right.
There's always a few things you think, I just wish they'd done this, wish they'd done this. But with that being said, Evil had accomplished pretty much everything there is to accomplish in New Japan relative to his level of talent, right? This is not a guy who you would have expected or demanded to be like headlining a Wrestle Kingdom or being the ace of a company, but for a guy who was a very solid, if unspectacular, worker, reliable, selfless, he achieved a lot. He had a G1 finalist. He was a world champion, and I think he deserved that. So it's not like, oh, we've left so much money on the table with Evil leaving the company. Like, the big picture thought from me here is that roster turnover is good. So whilst, you know, I might be a little bit disappointed for the reasons I've outlined, him leaving gives a huge opportunity for someone else to step up to that role. And it does make me wonder, you know, all this stuff that's been going on with Callum Newman, were they doing that knowing that Evil's on his way out? Like, is it Callum Newman is going to be the top heel at the company now? Because could be that, could be Jake Lee. I don't know. Could be someone else in House of Torture. Maybe there's so many possibilities. And that is exciting, that when a big name like Evil leaves, it that frees up a spot on the roster for someone else to step up and take that opportunity. So there's silver linings to that.
I agree. I agree with just about everything you said, in the sense of the guy is one of the rare New Japan pro wrestling mainstays, so to speak, that has done it all. Like forever, he will be in that video montage of IWGP champions. He's had great matches. He's had some disappointing matches. He's had, there's not a guy on that roster that I think, you know, maybe like guys like Kenny or, I don't know, like I would probably say we're talking about polarizing wrestlers. Like, the Evil's probably, in as long as we've been doing this show, is probably top of, if not the top of the list when it comes to that. Again, there are times where you just shake your head and you're like, why is he doing this? And then there's other times where it's like, well, yeah, of course they trusted him in a big spot to put over a guy in his first pro wrestling match in front of, you know, near 50,000 at the Tokyo Dome. Like, but yeah, makes sense.
I think even when he was at his most controversial, I don't feel any of the anger and the vitriol was ever directed at him specifically. It was more the booking rather than anything that he was doing with it. I think, you know, it was generally accepted that this is a, you know, good company guy who's just doing what he's told.
Yeah. Yeah. And especially with this one wasn't a bad blood, I'm leaving to get the bag.
He saw that little clip of Io Sky leaping into Triple H's arms and wrapping her legs around. It was like, yo, get me fucking William Regal on the phone now.
Yeah, we're putting a fucking end to this shit. Yeah. Like, I can't imagine trying to have a relationship. Like it's already difficult being a pro wrestler and having that, you know, that's your job and you're on the road so often and you're rarely home. And when you are home, you're trying to make the most of it. But that's a tough life. Now, both of them in separate, you know, areas of the world. I mean, I can't fault the guy at all. And he'll probably make a little extra money on the side, I'm sure, right?
I'm really looking forward to seeing all the WWE fans like trying to gas him up and say how brilliant he was and what a huge get this is.
right. I'm actually kind of curious how WWE might use him.
He is pure sports entertainment, isn't he? Like,
he really
being
is
there for Wrestle Kingdom. I was like, yeah, this guy is like tailor made for that kind of American style pro wrestling.
Oh, fuck yeah. I mean, yes, no doubt. Now, again, the problem is that, again, taking the at home, the relationship, the marriage, the whole nine yards, just try to take that out of the equation. Might be difficult to do, but let's just humor ourselves. Take that out of the equation. Like, it was a bit of a shock to have him be a guy that would be going to WWE, just like on the surface, right? Like, what you said is absolutely true, where, you know, looking at it without New Japan goggles, he is perfect for WWE. But still, it was just like one of those, ooh, wowee. like a very interesting move. And dare I say, a little bit ballsy. Because again, you would hope that WWE would do something with him and you know, make him bigger than he is. Make you know, currently in the pecking order of professional wrestling. But we also know that WWE sometimes shits the fucking bed. A lot of times shits the fucking bed. So again, I think everyone's expecting a we're going to enhance the comic book aspect of evil. And, you know, I'm sure that'll be magnified 1,000%. But I am curious. Like, I will absolutely watch his debut. I kind of am curious what, not kind of, I am curious as to what they might do with him. For New Japan, again, it opens the door for a lot of people. It does remove an element, and I'm speaking for the Western fan base. And there's a lot that are just like, I'll drive them to the fucking airport. Just so I don't have to be subjected to more House of Torture. Again, it doesn't mean House of Torture is done, but I mean, it gives them an opportunity to put it to bed. And, you know, I think that could be exciting. I think that could be fun. And I think to put the spotlight on other people, I think, you know, let's see what happens. I'm down for it.
I'm looking forward to like a big WWE show that's headlined by Cody against Evil. Imagine someone telling you that in 2018.
I know, really.
Big stars in the WWE. Wow. Yeah. What a time to be alive.
Will he be on this year's WrestleMania show?
Sure, why not? Like, let's put him in the Royal Rumble. Let's go big.
Oh, when is the Royal Rumble? Isn't that like this weekend? And I think it's in Saudi Arabia, isn't it? I think. I don't know. Okay, I'll.
But he would have a hell of a WrestleMania entrance.
Oh, you kidding me? It would be amazing. It would really
this
would
is gonna
be
piss off AEW fans so badly, Dave. And they're going to be like, "Oh, fucking Super J Cars, like glazing WWE." But look, I'm happy for the guy. Watanabe finally making it to the big leagues.
Oh, jeez, Louise. Oh, Joel.
When you have reached the top wrestling company in the world, right? You know, how can you not be happy for the guy? I'm proud of him, my boy. Watanabe, he's done it.
Hey, listen, I'm glad he gets to spend time with his fucking wife, you know, and again, gets to be on national television, well, Netflix, if that's national television, whatever, wherever the fuck they are now. Good for him. Good for everybody. Everybody's happy.
Right. So that's Evil.
Who else? Saying there's more?
So I'll just read the quote we were given. So the season's chopping block seems to be Sanada, Evil, Finlay, Gabe, and Hiromu. So Sanada, neck fusion surgery. That's what we've heard. That is a long, tough road. Like, there's no guarantees about coming out the other end of that, being able to wrestle again. So I would say, by all accounts, I wouldn't be holding my breath to see Sanada back in New Japan in the future. Are you on the same page?
Yeah, I mean, when you start talking about spine, neck, and especially, again, I'm not saying like he's 65 and he's ready to collect a pension, but you know, he's up there when in pro wrestling age. Like, is it worth it? You know, those are all questions he's going to have to answer for himself. It would make a nice story if you were able to make that happen. And I would.
Can I do that nice story in pro wrestling, Noah, please? I don't want to be part of it in New Japan.
Right. Give me one match. And I'm rooting for him. You know what I mean? Like, I'm rooting for him to fucking come on the other side of this and be able to wrestle. But yeah, that's tricky. It's tricky. And I'd rather, well, he is. He's erring on the side of caution at this point, in the sense of he's going away and getting surgery and getting taken care of his health, and as he should. And We can only hope that, you know, again, he's able to get back into the ring once again.
So Thursday there was Finlay, and I think I've sort of been higher on David Finlay than most people. I think he's a tremendous wrestler. I think he's been crucial in helping this new crop of homegrown stars. I say stars, but homegrown guys do his absolute best to get them over by having really high quality matches. I think sort of from a technical standpoint in ring, he's an outstanding wrestler. But at the same time, kind of in the evil boat, I think he's not won the world title, but he's one of these guys where I think him not winning the world title makes the world title more prestigious. Because not everyone should win the world title. So him being a nearly guy, I think he's actually good for the IWGP championship. And again, probably hit a ceiling in the company. I don't think New Japan ever saw him as a top guy, like as someone who could win a G1 or headline a Wrestle Kingdom. I think similar to Evil, like very talented, committed, professional, solid hands who would do everything he can to make the other wrestlers look good. But again, I'm filing this one under roster turnover is good. And him leaving is going to free up a spot for someone else, which is probably Callum Newman, who seems to have very nicely slid into that spot as being the top foreign heel in the company. And those two are going to wrestle each other at New Beginning. And again, this is not confirmed that David Finlay is going, but there have been plenty of rumours circulating. Obviously, there's the connections with WWE, with his dad, his brother's there in NXT. So I think there's a fair chance he ends up in NXT. And not from anything we've heard, but just by looking at the way he is booked, the fact that he has been downcycled since winning the New Japan Cup, to me, indicates that there's a kind of mutual understanding that he's probably not going to stick around. And you know, maybe him winning that New Japan Cup was, I don't know if they would have known that back then. I mean, probably not. I'm kind of stretching a bit, but that could have been his sort of gold watch. So, you know, thanks for all the years of service. Have a New Japan Cup, off you go. But, you know, that's just probably a bit of a stretch. But yeah, tremendous wrestler, but time to move on, I think.
See, and to be clear, his name was in the list of people that were moving on. We 1,000% understand that he has a match at New Beginning against Callum. We would assume that that will tie into this in some way, shape, or form, whether that's, you know, they pull a Jay White and say, okay, you can't wrestle here anymore, or it's a battle of whatever. But his name definitely was on that list of a person who would very near future not be with New Japan. I think he never got a fair shot. And if New Japan kind of felt that way, it was really, I don't know, you can't put a guy in what a lot of people associate with New Japan Pro Wrestling and tell that he's the leader of this faction, a Bullet Club, and then kind of go half-hearted on it. He's very much underrated and very much underappreciated. And again, another name, and we have a few that we'll talk about here. Another name that came up through the New Japan system. I think there's always been whispers and always been, you know, when we talk about guys that could even potentially be leaving without any information. His name always seemed to surface. And I think, you know, the things where, you know, I think it was his dad that was talking about stuff of him maybe possibly leaving. This was, you know, a good couple years ago. But it is, this is not an Okada situation where it's, fuck this company, I'm out. Like, I feel like David Finlay, it's just time to go.
Like everything I heard backstage was like, he is like a proper New Japan soldier. He would do whatever the company tell him to do. So I don't think any kind of bad blood whatsoever.
No, none. That said, again, I don't know if he's ever really got his due at New Japan. And it was a tough... like everything that he was able to do for himself while in New Japan was, and I think he would be the first to say, I don't want to put words into the guy's mouth, but it was an up, see, he's swimming upstream, constantly swimming upstream. And, you know, he's that perfect example of if you don't treat a guy like he's serious, then it's hard to for people to get invested in it. And I never really thought they went all in on him. And again, if they felt like he wasn't a guy that could be put in those spots, then don't put him in a spot like that. Like, create something new for the guy.
And you, just to clarify, like, do you think they should have gone all in with it? Because I never thought he never had that like tip top charisma of like a Kenny Omega or a Jay White or an AJ Styles. Like, he was brilliant in the ring, but he never had that. I don't know.
Yeah, it's hard because it's a perception. Like, a lot of people see him and saw him as Young Lion David Finley, and it was hard for people to, and not only Young Lion David Finley, but it felt like always in the lower middle car David Finley. And it was just such a fucking grind to get him to a certain point. And once they did get him to a certain point, it was like, oh, he's the new leader of the Bullet Club. And people kind of weren't into it. And that's partially the company. And again, there is an argument to be made. Like if we're going down the list of Bullet Club leaders, I see people's point where it's hard to go shoulder to shoulder with Kenny and AJ and even Jay White. So
they were all given like big things out of the gate, whether it be like G1 wins or IWGP title wins to really cement the fact that they're a top guy.
Yeah. I mean, you have to do that. And again, just by putting him in that position, that's a tough road. And I don't, again, if the company's not going to go all in and if they're going to go 75%, that's tough. To me, he's a guy that I feel like is going to be a bigger loss than people think. And I'm not saying like gates are going to drop and business is in the shitter and but I think like if people throw around solid hand a lot, like he's a guy that I think will be missed with the current group that's waving goodbye. Like there are a lot of holes to be filled. And again, the one thing that just troubles me a little bit is the fact that these are all homegrown guys. Except Sonata. Let me take that back. Sonata, obviously not, but you get my point. So far, evil David Finley. But there's more.
Yeah, we'll come into the next one, but I just think this is the natural life cycle of a foreign wrestler in New Japan. And I think people might miss and not give credit for what he did for his opponents. If you think of his series of matches with guys like Yota Tsuji or Hiroki Goto or Shota Umino, I think he was really had a strong hand in Shota Umino elevating himself and finding extra gears off the back of last year's New Japan Cup final. So whilst it might not be for any individual accolades that he had or any really transcendental matches, I think what he did for his opponents in helping them to grow shouldn't be understated.
I agree. I mean, the upper middle of the card gets a little bit lighter. I mean, there's people that are going to need to step up. And again, it is opportunity for a lot of people. And I know there are probably a lot of salivating mouths there just waiting for that opportunity. But like, those are Evil and David Finley are two really solid guys in the middle of your show. That's going to be missed.
So the next name, Gabe Kidd. You know, I think we've talked plenty about him before, so there's not a huge amount to say there. I mean, my understanding was that he would like to have a dual contract, but I'm a bit skeptical on the value of those because You know, you don't want to share your toys with other people. That's no good. So I think, again, I'll just be repeating myself at this point. I think from an in-ring standpoint, there is still a lot of value in Gabe Kidd and maybe playing that role that Finlay played in helping the new guys get to that next level. Like, you know, have a program of matches where he's, you know, against a guy like Yuya or a guy like Oiwa or a guy like Yuto Ice. Like, that would be really, really good. So I'm not, you know, chasing Gabe out the door, but I think the ship has sailed on him ever being a top guy in New Japan, which is sad because the potential was absolutely there after Wrestle Dynasty last year in that match with Kenny Omega, but he wanted to have his cake and eat it. And I do stand by my original assessment that the work he did in AEW fundamentally compromised the character he was trying to present in New Japan, and he never really recovered from that. So whilst he's still a very talented wrestler with a lot to offer, he's never going to be a top New Japan guy. So yeah, I'm ambivalent on him whether he stays or goes, and I'm probably expecting him to go.
I don't know that this one is a disappointment in the sense of, you know, this time last year we couldn't rave enough about him and the potential and how he's leaning into this, you know, defender of New Japan, and how everything felt authentic and everything felt like, you know, touches and tastes of how a lot of people were feeling in the state of New Japan and being a fan of New Japan. Like, he was kind of saying the things we were all thinking. And then, you know, that kind of dried up rather quickly. I mean, getting hurt in the opening week of G1, that didn't help at all. And then, you know, he's out jumping off fucking cages and shit at AEW. You know, so it's just kind of like, wait, what's happening here? What's going on? That is a big disappointment because there's a ton of what could have been. And it just, again, injuries never help, obviously, but it was more than that. And I think when the native New Japan Pro Wrestling fan started to feel, what the fuck's this? You're a lot of talk, but you're saying one thing, but you're doing another thing. And like that was one of the rare times that it was more of a Japanese kind of what the fuck's going on, as opposed to Western dorks, you know, kind of spewing off at the mouth about what they want from a Japanese pro wrestling promotion. So, again, we always say we're not going to fault a guy for chasing the bag. Again, I don't think this is a situation where, I mean, look, Gabe Kidd's not liked by everyone in that fucking company. Let me be very clear. And, you know, it's a matter of you made your bed and they're good luck. You know, that's really what it is. But there is a big taste of disappointment, for me anyway, of what could have been.
And the last name that's rumored by our sources to be on as well is Hiromu, which, again, was going to be a big surprise for a lot of people. My understanding, like, I remember years ago, David, we were talking about him like he was a transcendental, cannot miss, like, absolute nailed on megastar for this company if they just moved him to heavyweight. Yeah. And from what we hear, he was asked to do that, but he was quite happy with the role that he had in the junior division. Again, I don't know if that's true. That could be complete bullshit. Who knows? It felt like last year, the matches he had putting over Kosei Fujita and Francesco Akira in Best of the Super Juniors, and the post-match promos he was giving in that tournament really, to me, felt like that was it. He was done as a junior and he was going to be moving up to heavyweight. But then obviously something has changed and that never happened, right? He had his heavyweight tag run, well, open weight tag run, if we call it that, with Naito. You know, he'd flirted a bit with heavyweight where he'd had these open weight matches with Naito, with Hinare, people like that. But for whatever reason, never really pulled the trigger on him becoming a heavyweight. And yeah, it seems like, again, that ship has sailed at this point. And from what we hear, he possibly more interested in following Naito down whatever path he's going. So it's hard not to look at Hiromu as leaving, potentially leaving, as another missed opportunity. But again, I'm looking at in terms of him freeing up space in the junior division and roster turnover. Like I think I've seen enough Hiromu Takahashi at this point. Love the guy, great wrestler, very charismatic, but I'm not going to be crying into my cornflakes about him moving on to do something else.
Yeah. I mean, there was that stretch where he was, quite honestly, one of the hottest guys in New Japan. And a lot of that had to do with that, and I put in air quotes, that reckless style and injuries mounted. And, you know, you can't work that style in a sense of, you know, you're going to hurt yourself again. But I think back on like the Kamaitachi days and yeah, I don't see him. I mean, he could definitely wind up doing tours and doing shows and but I don't expect him to sign full time anywhere in the States. Yeah, I think he's Naito bound, whatever that might look like. And it's weird because the proof's in the pudding. Again, if what we were told actually was the case, you know, we sit behind these microphones and we, you know, we talk about the information that we get and share with you, the listeners. And a lot of times we assume and we talk as if it's the company and the company's deciding this path and why won't they pull the trigger and why won't they do it? You know, sometimes it's the wrestler that might be holding that back because they're content with where they are and what they're doing. And they don't necessarily want to make a move to a heavyweight division. That being said, though, we've seen it countless times with juniors where they either A, grow stagnant and move up to heavyweight, or B, there's a ceiling and they have to go because they've done everything. And it's like, okay, how many more times are we going to see Hiromu versus Ishimori? How many times are we going to, you know, it kind of, it's like, okay, we get it. And I think that's the case here. I think he's a fantastic pro wrestler. I think at one time he was maybe one of the more exciting wrestlers that this roster had. And I would say the entire state of pro wrestling. Like, you looked forward to those matches. Those Dragon Lee matches were some of the fucking best junior matches on God's green earth. That was a while ago. That was a decent amount of time ago. And now here we are in 2026. And it's like, now what? I mean, the guy went to Noah to, you know, just to what else can I do?
The most interesting stuff he's done over the last 12 months has been outside of New Japan.
Right. Right. So, you know, I don't know what that will look like. Whatever that promotion or whatever that thing that Naito wants to do looks like. I don't know if he winds up in Noah. Who knows? But it sounds like he, whatever Naito's doing, he's doing. So again, that doesn't necessarily mean that he won't show up on an AEW television taping and do a couple of shows here and there. And but as it stands right now, he's whatever Naito's doing, he seems to be on board.
So big picture, like if all these come to pass, is this the amount of roster turnover here something that concerns you or excites you? Because to me, I'm definitely in the latter camp.
Yeah, it excites me. Again, the biggest issue I have is that they're all, again, minus Sonata, mind you, homegrown talent. Like they've all gone through the dojo system. They've all, you know, have been with this company throughout. And it's a little bit sad when those people that you're used to seeing show after show after show after show are no longer there. But there is something fresh and exciting and vibrant about the idea of who and how is and what is next. Like that's an exciting thing and an exciting time. It doesn't mean it's going to be as good as it was. We might take a step backwards here. But we also might take two steps forward. Who knows? But it does give people opportunity. And that's the silver lining in all this. It's going to give guys opportunity, and we'll see if they take the ball and run with it.
Right, so let's dip into these Road to the New Beginning shows that took place at Corcoran Hall. I'm not going to go match by match or anything. Let's just sort of talk about some of the key things that emerged from it. So let's do a little Young Lion Cup date. So I think arguably the most interesting thing that happened so far in this Young Lion Cup was Zane J going rogue. So during his match with Daiki Nagai, Callum Newman popped up ringside and started interfering in the match, slid a chair into the ring, and Zane J used it to attack Daiki Nagai. Full view of the referee, got himself disqualified. So Zane J has now been taken on as the new protege for United Empire. I love the angle. I thought it was great. It was exciting. They've not done anything like that with Young Lions for a long time. I think it's a really great way to make Zane J stand out rather than, you know, going down the Gabe Kidd path of being like, oh, you know, Shinny Hon, blah, 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 dojo boy, rah, rah. Like, instantly he's become a detestable heel. And I love the work that Callum Newman did in that as well, just being this bitter, corrupting influence, like ruining it for everyone else and, you know, getting in people's ear and winning them round to his diabolical way of thinking. I just thought, all round, really excellently done angle.
Yeah, it was, quite honestly, I mean, I was excited for the Young Lions Cup to begin with. I will also say that I think Chris Charlton did an outstanding job on that show. I do want to point that out. And again, specifically with the history of the Young Lions Cup and previous winners, I thought he did a really good job. And he was flying solo, too, for the show. So, yeah, I got to tip my cap there. Here's the thing. After Callum walks out, you know, you knew things were about to get interesting, but I think no one was expecting the fact that he was going to walk out, right? That he was going to show up. And it did add a little extra flavor to a tournament that I think everyone is, you know, at least sitting upright watching and, you know, interested in which way they go with a lot of these young guys. It made it, they booked themselves out of a guy who had to, you know, lie down. Somebody had to lie down. Somebody's moving forward. Somebody's winning this tournament. But it was a creative way to kind of give somebody a loss and at the same time make them bigger, which is not always an easy thing to do. So, yeah, I mean, it was unexpected. It kind of jolted you a little bit. And, yeah, you just made somebody a bigger name than he was when he walked in the ring. So, success. Yeah, I can't shit on that at all.
Yeah, it just sort of contributes to the overall aura of United Empire, who they're the hottest faction of the company right now. And that is a hell of a turnaround where they were pretty much the punchline of the whole faction thing prior to Wrestle Kingdom. But now making waves, it's tremendously exciting. I've still got my United Empire hoodie. I'm going to be wearing that with pride. Not that it's nice. Anyone is going to know what it is. But, yeah, so we've got Sho Makoto and Katsuya Murashima, as expected, as predicted, going through to the final. So the two more senior young lines, they're going to face each other at the show at Korakuen Hall at the start of next month. Does anyone else impress you from the Young Lion Cup matches? I really enjoyed, I think it was Yasuda who did like the botch standing shooting star press. I had a good chuckle at that. But what stood out to you? Anyone really catch your eye in those other Young Lion matches?
I thought every match was good. It's funny, you know, Yota Tsuji getting the win with a Boston crab. We made comments about that. What's the quote? I respect the guy who does one move.
Bruce Lee, I fear the man who practiced one kick 1,000. I fear not the man who practiced 1,000 kicks one time, but the man who practiced one kick 1,000 times.
Right. So, it's like, not that it wasn't before for these Young Lion matches, but again, it kind of gave it a little bit extra juice when it's locked on. That was the one thing. Like I was very happy. Like he could have won. You know, he could have, you know, maybe a suplex or maybe a fucking whatever, a basic hold. And I know Boston crabs are, you know, a staple when it comes to these things. But again, it was just a nice little extra spicy Boston crab just because of what we saw a few weeks earlier. So. That did not go unnoticed.
Also pretty cool that they're all getting merchandise now. I like the Murashima shirt with the big katakana symbol that just says Moo on the front. I wish I could have bought myself a Moo shirt while I was in Japan.
I know. Nobody's going to get this reference, but it's like in spiral carpets. Okay, move on. Go ahead.
That's a good one, David. Yeah,
thanks, love buddy. It. My 90s Britpop reference. There you go.
Let's stay with United Empire for now because they did some cool stuff on these shows. Callum Newman said backstage that he is the only foreign wrestler with a multi-year contract. Apparently, that is legit. He does have a multi-year contract, so that's exciting. It's interesting that he is the person that they chose to tie down to a long-term deal, so they're obviously seeing the value there. And you know, there's always the flight risk element with white people being pushed, but hopefully we'll get a good few years out of Callum before that happens, because I can see the talent, I can see the potential there. I've been singing his praises, I feel like, longer than most. You know, from early last year, I could see that there was something there, and his work in the G1 was outstanding, and you could see those rough edges emerging, and the real,
but then he fell off the face of the earth.
Yes, he did fall off the face of the earth, but I don't know what that was all about, but he's back now and I'm happy he's back, because he's got real attitude and swagger, just as this bitter little shithead who's still nursing all these grudges and grievances that have been inflicted on him over the last few years, and is just taking it out on everyone else. I love that. Again, we're mixing real life with storyline stuff, which is, I think, the best kind of drama you get in pro wrestling. And I really enjoyed the angle that they did when they took out Shingo and they injured his ribs. And he's going to be missing the rest of the tour, and which is a shame. You know, that's probably ruined his honeymoon.
I was about to say, he's going on honeymoon. He's going to Hawaii.
We're gonna have to cancel the flights, call the hotel, notice off that bloody bloody Jake Lee. They've ruined everything. But Shingo is due to be back at New Beginning in Osaka. But again, I just thought of a very good angle. They've gone all out here, pulled out all the stops to make United Empire and Callum Newman and Jake Lee look like a bunch of badasses.
Yeah. Well, and the good news is that there's obviously more to come and bigger things to come, right? I think we're getting just a taste. We're the appetizer course, and things are looking good, and like we haven't even hit the fucking, you know, the entree yet. So we know that's coming. We know that's right around the corner. So again, he's committed, obviously, the company's committed, obviously. There's open spaces for people to move up the pecking order and up the ladder, he's going to make the most of it. He's going to make the most of it. And it looks like they're going to give it to him. So, yeah, it should be an interesting year for Callum Newman. That's for fucking sure. Do you think Callum is... I'm not going to say he's main eventing Wrestle Kingdom, but do you think he's in the upper three matches of Wrestle Kingdom?
Depends how good he gets. Like, there's really is an extremely high potential for him to be. Like, it's hard to avoid the Ospreay comparisons, isn't it? Just by the fact that he's so young, and he's better at the age he's at now than Ospreay was at the same age. He's bigger than Ospreay. He's still got room to grow out, and already he's a big dude. He's a muscular guy, and could get even bigger. And if he's able to improve at the rate he's already improving, like what we saw in that Dontaku match against Goto, that was very encouraging. And it's not as if since then he's been given big singles main events with, you know, 25 minutes to work the main event style. I think he absolutely could do it. So I want to see what that looks like first, because there's every chance that this could be a guy who can deliver those tippy-toppy snowflake matches that the Western fans love so much. And then if that is the case, what are we missing then? Why not go all the right. way with him? I mean, there's always that ceiling on the Western wrestlers where your ceiling is probably losing in a Wrestle Kingdom main event. I don't think he's going to be winning one, but... you know, with the exception of Zack Sabre Jr. But, you know, you think of your guys like your Kenny Omegas, your Jay Whites, your Will Ospreys. But still, that would be a hell of a spot for him. And I don't see any reason why he couldn't get there, because he's ticking all the boxes for me so far.
Yeah. We forget that he is young and he's still growing into his body, and he's growing into himself as a pro wrestler. We forget that. I think the only thing, like, barring injury, I think the sky's the fucking limit. I really do.
It will be the Ospreay match. The match he has with Ospreay, that will launch him into the stratosphere, whenever that is.
Again, we've said this about Will, where, and again, this was you know, a year, at least over a year ago, talking about Will, and he could have a great match with just about anybody, and he's everyone's best match and blah, blah, blah. I still think he has that in him. Is he the same Will Ospreay as he was 3 years ago, 4 years ago? No. I mean, injuries have caught up with him significantly. That said, like, if there's going to be a match where it's going to be like, okay, you need to tune in and see this match, like, he's a guy that I would trust wholeheartedly to help elevate him. And they're pals, and you know, they have relationships outside the ring. And yeah, I mean, I think not only is it Will, but, and here's the thing too, kind of circling back, like, David Finlay is a guy that can do that too, I think. And like, I think people need to circle that New Beginning match. I really do.
Let's talk a bit about Jake Lee. We have a question here from Dumefia. Says, what do you make of Jake Lee's presentation? I haven't been a fan in the past, but his new character is quite intriguing.
I'm willing to give him more of a chance. I think this is better than tag Jake Lee. And I know that we were hyping up Jake Lee and Gabe Kidd and the idea of him being in a tag situation. Look, I think the biggest challenge that people have with Jake Lee being put in this position is when the bell rings and I need you to fucking have a great match, can you make that work for us? So I'm willing to hold out. Let's put it this way. What I've seen so far has been more than fine. More than fine. Good. Good stuff. My issue was when the bell rings. And I think that's a lot of people's problems too. Again, some people still aren't sold on him. Like, people are just like, he's a bag of fucking socks. I like what I see so far, and it's a little bit different than what we've seen so far. Previous, it's the match, Joel, that I think a lot of people are concerned with, and until he has a good match, in a higher profile spot, I think the jury's going to be still out.
I think the best thing that they could probably do for that New Beginning match is to keep it short.
Yeah.
Don't feel the need to do the, 25 plus minute New Japan style epic, because I don't think that will necessarily play to the strengths of either he or Tsuji. But I do really like the presentation. I like the music. I like the entrance. I like the, he's got differently coloured eyes. I feel him, find it very sort of charismatic and quite sinister. I just like all the little the dances he does and the thing he does where he points at the camera and smiles and then clenches his fist and the smile melts away. It's very menacing. It's very intimidating guy. I like it. I think it's a very interesting take on the character. It reminds me a bit, if anyone's seen Battle Royal, the psychopath character of that, Kiriyama, it reminds me a bit of that. So I'm sure there's like plenty of sort of Japanese media, movie, film, TV, video game characters of that ilk, that sort of like charismatic psychopath character. And look, to be clear, I don't think he is necessarily being positioned as a top guy in New Japan. I think this is like, it's the Kenta challenge, isn't it? Think he's going to be an upper mid-carder. I don't think this is him nailed on as a main eventer for the foreseeable future. I think there was an interview that just dropped recently, actually, with him talking to Tokyo Sports. There's a quote here Andrew's put on the Discord. He said, Jake calls himself the court jester who can speak truth to the king here. So, I mean, that kind of indicates that Callum is the leader. And, yeah, Jake Lee is the court jester, which is like a fun way of putting it. But, yeah, I'm enjoying the presentation so far. I find him very, very fun to watch, very absorbing. And, again, if he can make that enjoyable and watchable in the interstitial moments of his match between the moves, then I think we're onto something there. I think it could be quite successful.
And
he's a handsome man as well.
With the Tsuji match specifically, like my fear is that this match doesn't hit, right? And people are going to be like, wow, fucking New Japan's cooked because now they have this champion who can't carry Jake Lee to a 92,75,507 star match.
Do I have concerns about that? It's not really. I mean, it's only New Beginning. If it can scare off some of the monthlies, the tourists, then more's the better. I think it would be really good.
Okay. All right. Listen, I'm cautiously optimistic. How about that? Cautiously optimistic. Yeah. Because to me that's going to be a big challenge for Tsuji, and it's going to be again, that depends on how the match is structured. I'm not going to sit here and lie and say I have no concerns, but I'm cautiously optimistic.
It's worth a try, isn't it? Worth kicking the tires on him.
Yep.
Right, let's talk about some of the title matches then. So there was a NEVER Openweight Six-Man Tag Team Championship match where the challengers, Bishamon Tin, Oleg Boltin, Yoshihashi, and Hiroki Goto, defeated the champions, Hartley Jackson, Diohei Oiwa, and Zack Sabre Jr., 18 minutes and 7 seconds, as Goto pinned Oiwa after a GTR. Comb Factor says, was that the best NEVER Six-Man Tag match of all time?
Ooh. It was really good. I thought it was really good. I was a little disappointed in the title change. I felt like Hartley was just, he finally gets his fucking moment in the sun and they take it away that quick. And on the other hand, I was a little bit happy in the sense that, okay, that does free up Zach a little bit. And I think Bolton and, Goto and, Yoshihashi are probably the best NEVER six-man tag team. I think it gives all of them something to do. It helps fill out that mid card. They're a fun team. I like them all as a team. I think it works. So again, there was little tiny things where that I was like, ah, that sucks that they TMDK lost the titles. But I'm totally okay with who holds the title because I think they can have more of a run, keep those titles interesting and fresh, have great matches like they had here. And it frees up guys on the TMDK side. So I'm okay with it.
Sorry, I'm still here. I just went to get some water. I got really thirsty. Aww.
All right, no problem. Yes, listen,
I'm back now. I'm back. My favorite Never Six Man Tag Champions are still the COVID team. Who was it? Was it Goto, Yoshihashi, and Ishii? Am I remembering that correctly? I said they're my favorite. I can't even remember who they are. Yeah, I think it was those three who just gave us a little slice of joy in what was a pretty fucking miserable time, to be honest. So they're my favorites. And I think there's a case to be made for, was it Okada, Tanahashi, Ishii? Mm-hmm. That was a pretty great.
How about Ricochet? Wasn't it Ricochet, Tanahashi, and who else? Who was it? Yano?
Like Taguchi or something.
Yeah, some fucking crazy team. Oh my God. There's been some crazy ones. Like Elgin and what I think Elgin, Tanahashi, and somebody were in the mix. Boy, those titles, man. I got a Wikipedia that and just go through some of those names and be like, what in the fuck? Wow. But yeah, I like where we're at with the Never Six Man. I think we're good here.
What I really liked about it was I felt the focus of the match was on the younger guys. It was on Oleg Boltin and Yohei Oiwa. Mm. So whilst it was Oiwa that ate the pin, I think there was enough in the match that sort of threw more fuel into that fire that I felt was kindled during World Tag League and specifically in that New Year Dash main event where I feel we've really got something here. And he's starting to find himself. He's starting to feel the love of the crowd. And like I said, like these guys are starting to get it, right? The big dogs have moved on. It's a new era. And you've got to stake your claim. Like you deliver or someone else is going to take your spot. Yeah. And to me, from what I've seen so far, given that, you know, he's been put in a tag match and a trios match, I was delivering the good so far. I'm excited to see what his singles work looks like now. And he's got some interesting stuff coming up. I think he's got a main event with Goto, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, he's got a main event with Goto on February the 2nd at Gorakuen Hall. So I think that's going to be a really nice indicator of where we're at with Oiwa. And Boltin has got a special singles match with Hartley Jackson. So it'll be interesting to see where that goes. Boltin's facing Ishii for the strong championship in the Trencoid show as well.
Yeah, I'm gonna go to that. I told you it was like tickets are fucking dirt cheap. I'll be there. I mean how about that one spot where Ollie's just fucking doing his little tilt-a-whirl on the beefy Hartley, and that was pretty fucking impressive. I've gotta be honest with it. Big boys bagging around in there in that ring. It's nice. Love it. Go get your water.
I think this is also like a case in point for what I'm enjoying at the moment, using the veteran wrestlers to be there to showcase and complement the younger guys. So Zach and Hartley and Goto and Yoshihashi, like they're all really good in this match, but I felt everything that they did was there to service Oiwa and Boltin. Yeah. Which I think is exactly the way I want to see the more experienced wrestlers used. I mean, there is absolutely a place for, you know, guys like Zach or Goto, whomever, to have their runs in the main event and little soirees with the world title. But by and large, like, this is still fitting into this theme of the new era where, you know, we're going to talk about this in the heavyweight tag match on the same show, the main event here, which was the IWGP Tag Team Championship number one contenders match, where Yuya Uemura and Shota Umino defeated Taichi and Tomohiro Ishii. 30 minutes, 38 seconds. Shota pinned Ishii. Second chapter. Good shit.
Great. Really great. Like I would go so far as to say, if you haven't watched it, and again, I can understand why you might be a little bit like, I got better things to do with my weekend or whatever. Go out of your way and watch that match. I got to be honest with you. Go out of your way and watch the entire show. It flew by. And it was a good show. And I really felt like with what we know now, there was a lot of, okay, we can't fuck about. We gotta make a show that helps steer us in the right direction, right? Really, maybe my favorite Shota match, period. Outstanding job by Taichi and Ishii. Like, they... Look, if you're going to trust veterans to give out a performance and lay it all on the line to help make... People, this was not the tag titles. They were not on the line. This was an opportunity to wrestle Knockout Brothers for the title. And the match fucking had all the drama you could want. It really was a great match. And I'm telling you flat out, watch it. And I dare you to think otherwise. Like, again, this night, mark it down in your calendar. Circle it. Now, again, I'm not saying that the momentum of this match catapults him into the fucking stratosphere. But what this match did was it solidified a young tag team that looks like a good, fun, babyface tag team with a little bit of sandpaper. Like, they look the fucking part. They're exciting. They felt like they should be together, and now they move on to Knockout Brothers, and now maybe we have a nice long flip flop the belts back and forth. I don't give a fuck, but those matches should be great, and it gave me hope for Shota. It really did. It showed me that he has all those critiques and all those things that we've talked about him throughout the years of just not having the sandpaper, and he's cosplaying a pro wrestler, and it just doesn't feel authentic, and it just doesn't feel like he's even comfortable in the ring, let alone in the position that he's in. This match will give you hope. I promise you. Promise you. And once again, I don't care if Ishii's 40, 50, 60, 107. He is fucking great. And I don't care that it's, you get one Ishii match, you know what you're getting. I don't care. I don't care. He delivers. Taichi fucking delivers. How many opportunities did Taichi get in 2025, and yet he shows up and it's like, all right, let me fucking go and do this. And he did. And the youngsters showed up as well. Like, this match ruled. I'm telling you flat out. And it's shocking to say, it's not for the titles. So now what you did was you're making the titles important without even having the title match. Like, that's a great job by New Japan. That is a great fucking job. And it's a great fucking job by those four guys in that ring. Hands down. Go out of your way and watch this match. And this match, I'm telling you, I was excited going into this show. And you texted me saying, that tag match was great. Make sure you catch it today. I'll catch it when I'm done work. And I popped that fucker on and I was like, God damn. The words came out of my mouth. We're back.
We're back. Just about to say it. We are so
We're
back.
Fucking back. Like that. I'm telling you, go out of your way to watch it. It's really that good.
Yeah, it's match of the year contender for me. And I know, like, it's only January, but I put it on the shortlist because, like you, I thought it's fucking excellent. And arguably as good as the match, or even more, a bit more exciting than the match, was the promo in the ring afterwards by Shota Umino. And he's a guy who's really sort of struggled with his character, his identity. And I've said for a long time now, the problem with Shota Umino is he's not cool.
Right.
And you can't force someone to be cool by slapping nicknames or haircuts or ring gear or fancy trousers or motorcycles or connections to other cooler wrestlers. You can't force that. You're either cool or you're not. And that's why it was so gratifying to hear him, like almost word for word, what I've said about him. He stood down the ring and said, I'm not cool. I'm a loser. The only way I can be cool is by fighting and struggling and beating people up. And I was like, yes, finally, he's starting to get it.
Yep.
And I think this is something that we've seen historically with other wrestlers, where those who have struggled to get themselves over it and make that connection with the fan base, when they have that moment where they are honest with themselves and honest with the fans and acknowledge their own failures and shortcomings, that is what allows you to plant the seeds for the future. And the way that he stood there and was speaking with such fire and passion about the humiliations he's had to endure, and the, you know, the booing and the ridicule again and again and again, and how he wasn't using his father as a crutch, and, you know, that doesn't work, that doesn't fly in New Japan Pro Wrestling. And even though he was getting the piss ripped out of him and everyone booing him when he was putting his neck on the line to entertain the fans, there were still people cheering for him and coming up to him and saying, hey, I hope you come back next time, and giving him that will to go on. So he finds himself in a really interesting spot, doesn't he? Whereas, you know, I don't, the temptation for a lot of fans would be like, turn him heel. But I'm not sure that's what would be best here. I really think that somewhere in there, there's quite an endearing babyface who has acknowledged that he's a bit of a failure and can try and grow something from the ashes of that. Like, when I heard him pouring his heart out like that, I was like, fuck, I want to see this guy succeed now. I want to see him get his redemption after hitting rock bottom and having everyone laughing at him. I found that incredibly compelling, and I'm really glad that he seems to be acknowledging that and leaning into that. And he's not someone that I think can be quote-unquote fixed by giving him a different gimmick or a different ring gear or a different haircut or a different nickname or different entrance music. Like, fundamentally, he's a fucking good wrestler. He is really good at that hard-hitting style. And, you know, I started to see that with his run in the New Japan Cup last year. Like, that New Japan Cup final with David Finlay, I was just like, whoa, where has this guy been hiding? He was outstanding. I thought he had a really good G1 as well. The tag stuff has been excellent. He just seems to have found his niche. Like, he's found a style in-ring that works for him, which is just, like, again, it is that classic Neverstar. He is working that style like, you know, your Taichis and Ishii's, where it's just, you know, laying in the chops and the forearms and the elbows, the clotheslines, the lariats, the knees. I think he's really good at it. I think he's a really, really good pro wrestler, and he's starting to find confidence now. I really hope they don't just break up the tag team, which, you know, seems like the obvious thing to do and seems inevitable at this point. But I just think a tag division is such a great vehicle to rehabilitate and find meaning and purpose for singles wrestlers who've kind of lost their way a bit. Like, tremendous use in this match of the veterans, Taichi and Ishii, who were just outstanding here and can always be relied on and are going to be instrumental for helping to get the new generation to where we want them to be. And yeah, like putting some love into the tag division, it just seems like such an easy win when you've got what is a pretty deep roster and you can't be pushing everyone all of the time, but just take four guys who aren't really doing much and put them in a tag title eliminator, and they go out there and they kill each other. And if it continues to be booked this well, then the prestige will come. Like, the heavyweight tag titles will feel like one of the most sought after championships in the company, and people look forward to it. I looked at the card for New Beginning on Osaka, saw semi-main event, tag team titles. I was like, fuck yes. I'm rubbing my hands together to have a tag title match as the penultimate match on this show in Osaka. That's how well that they've done with the tag division so far. And even the stuff that's going on outside of this match, like the second show, the show on the 20th, where they had the tag match with Knockout Brothers against Shota and Ernest Muscleman Matsumoto, which just turned into a squash. They threw Shota out of the ring and just absolutely destroyed Matsumoto, pinned him one-handed after about a minute. That's great. Like, I'd love to see that. Establish your champs as killers. So they've managed to make these tag titles arguably like one of, if not the most exciting titles to watch in the company.
And the good news is that these guys, it's not like you have one element of any one of those four where it's like, okay, he's the odd man out, or you know, he's up in age and, you know, he's kind of wet nursing three other guys in it. No, they're making it on their own. And we have something that is now you can go back to forever. And it doesn't necessarily have to be over the tag titles. It can be over, you know, any one of those four fighting over a never title first, and then maybe, you know, a TV title, or maybe vice versa, or maybe like this can go on. Like, this just gives you confidence, and it gives you something to really hit your wagon to. Yeah, they did this without the titles. They did this without any bullshit. Like, it was, I want to be the number one contender. And the number one contender means a lot, because then we get to take on the tag team champions and win, and we care about winning these titles. Like, that's what was conveyed in that 30 minutes, which is fantastic. And just to bring back to another point, it's like nobody was sitting here and saying, oh, Shota stinks, in the sense of he shouldn't even be in the ring. No, it was, give me something. Why are you here? You're being shoehorned in a situation where you can't even acknowledge you're not ready for it, let alone us to sit there and accept it. It, again, we have a lot of opportunity that's now on the table. There's a lot of opportunity, and we have four young studs that are going to make the most of their opportunity with titles that traditionally are hot and cold, hot and cold. And we could sit here and be skeptics and be, it's the tag titles, and yeah, okay, they can heat them up, but, you know, eventually they're going to cool down and all. Nah, let's ride this. And I hope, and this is me saying this shockingly, I hope they take their fucking time. Like, there's no need to rush any of these guys into being a singles right now. Like, let's milk this for all it's fucking worth, because it has the potential to be like a definitive moment in all four of these guys' careers. There will be videos and hype packages like bookmarking this moment, these moments, in all of these guys' career. So yeah, all I ask is that they take their time. They understand what they have, and let these guys cook. Like, because right now you got arguably the hottest thing in the promotion with Knockout Brothers, and you got something that's bubbling and percolating with Shota and Yuya. Like that. Like, what else? Like, we're cooking. We're fucking cooking here.
Even like looking at the New Beginning in Osaka card. And the second match on that is a special tag match. Driller Maloney and Shingo Takagi versus Great Okan Henare. Great. Like, this is exactly the thing I'm talking about, where you're taking four guys, not really doing anything at the moment, and presumably setting up a future challenger or contender for those tag team championships, because there's so much depth in this company. And World Tag League, I know a lot of people have skipped it, but for those people who watched it, it was really quite exciting and rewarding, and it was an eye-opener for a lot of people to think, wow, there's a lot of talent. This is a really deep roster and a lot of exciting things could happen, which is why, as we talked earlier, this roster turnover, all these people leaving, we're going to be fine. We're going to be fine.
Yep.
Doom FPL says, do you think we'll look back at Ishii wasting 3 years dicking around in meaningless AEW dross as a tragedy, given he can still go to this degree?
I mean, again, he got a fucking plane ticket to come to the States. We probably ate like a king. You probably had plenty of In-N-Out burger, you know? And he got to be on TV and get a little payday and all that nonsense. And he got the strong title, baby. He's still got that strong title, you know? We can go through a lot of questions like this about the past 5 years, the past 6 years. There's plenty of it, but like, to me, I know people sometimes want to point fault at the sameness and you get what you get with an Ishii match and blah, 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 blah. And sometimes he leans into that a little hard, especially when he's in the States, he becomes a little bit of a character of himself. He can still fucking go. Like, he's just a fucking pit bull. Like, thus the name on his t-shirt.
Yeah, I think it's like absence makes the heart grow fonder for me. Like, I don't want to see him doing that kind of match every week or even necessarily every month. But, you know, give me Ishii in a big spot like that where he's getting bloodied up and fighting as if his life depended on it like four times a year. Fuck yeah, sign me up for that. So,
yep.
I think I'm enjoying him being used more sparingly to help get the new guys over.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, that's his role at this point. And once again, I mean, a busted up nose, busted up lip. You can't accuse him of taking a day off. You really can't. Again, he might be a bit of a character of himself when he's in the States. You can't accuse him for taking a night off.
Okay, so on the show on the 20th, there was IWGP Junior Heavyweight Tag Team Championships. The Ichiban Sweet Boys, Kosei Fujita, Robbie Eagles defeated Yoshinobu Kanemaru and Sho. I got nothing, Damon.
I mean, I thought the match was okay. I thought the match was good. And here's where people are going to be like, thank God Evil's gone because House of Torture and we won't have to. Again, I don't know if that's the case. And here's the thing. I'm not putting everything on House of Torture matches. And by no means am I sitting here and trying to tell you and blow smoke up your ass to tell you that, you know, TMDK were the reason why this match wasn't as spectacular. I mean, we know the reasons. It wasn't a terrible match. It was a good match. It was House of Torture having somewhat of their working shoes on and not falling into the same tired tropes. Robbie was good. Fujita was good. Everybody was good. Look, I know we love to talk about Kanemaru and how he's, you know, a solid hand. And okay. I'm kind of at the end of my rope a little bit with that, and the spraying of the alcohol and all that. It is what it is. What are you going to do? We'll, yeah, that's what I'll say about that.
Yeah, co-sign on all of that. The match was fine. It's just doesn't really interest me. I'm glad that Fujita and Eagles have kept the titles. And look, the junior tag team wrestling can be outstanding. You know, we cast our minds back to the match that these two had with Akka and TJP, which was one of my favorite matches of 2024, which is why I can't muster any enthusiasm or takes for something like this when it's all the stuff we've seen a million times before. It was fine. It was relatively inoffensive. I'm not angry about it or upset. I'm glad Ichiban Sweet Boys won the titles. Let's move on and get some fresh challenges, please.
Yep, absolutely correct. You know, it was a good cheeseburger. Let's put it that way.
And the main event was the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Championship, where Doki defeated El Desperado. 16 minutes and 30 seconds with the suplex.
de la Luna. Stocky is still your junior heavyweight champion.
A little surprised by that. How about you?
Yeah.
I actually was. I thought we were destined for a title change here. I really did. And again, considering, I don't know, trying to play, you know, prognosticator with the things Despy's up to, not only, you know, here in the States, but in Japan. And it did feel like a little bit of, yeah, they're probably going to move the title. But I thought the match was okay. I thought the match was I don't know. I'm trying to put my finger on what I really thought was missing from it. I don't know. It was not that it was flat, but it was, I don't know. I was really kind of indifferent toward it. And that might be like Doki in House of Torture. It might be that, okay, I really thought there was going to be a title change. And not that I was like sitting here on the edge of my chair, like I need a title change to occur. But I just kind of, I guess I was resigned in my mind that it was going to happen. And I think I was more excited about, okay, where do we go from here? And I think it felt like they thought the same thing during the match. Like, let's just move on kind of thing. Yeah, I don't know. There was something missing. Some connective tissue that was missing in this match that it just didn't hit for me.
Yeah, the same. The match was good, but forgettable. I've just had my fill of El Desperado, so I can acknowledge that he's a tremendous wrestler and he had a brilliant year and he's very, very good at what he does. But I want something else. This just doesn't excite me for the junior division. I really want to sort of fast forward so we can get into some more exciting stuff. I want to see Francesco Acura in the mix. I want to see Kosei Fujita in the mix. I want to even see fucking Master Watto back in the mix. It just doesn't interest me. I don't know. It's very, very harsh, but this was a match that we anticipated. That was last Wrestle Kingdom, wasn't it?
Yeah.
A great entrance and Doki had broke his elbow and that had so much potential for huge feel-good moments when he came back, when they finally did the rematch. And this was it. It was fine. And that just is tremendously disappointing to me.
Right. Do you think that's Despy or do you think that's Doki?
It's everything. It's Despy overexposure. It's always having this title defended at Korakuen Hall. It's Doki's stupid heel turn where they didn't even show the heel turn. He just came out with House of Torture. It's everything. Like the lackluster booking of the junior division as a whole has just made me feel a deep sense of malaise towards it.
Yeah. I really feel like this company can't do more than one thing at once. Like it can't walk and chew gum, you know, like they have to just be hyper focused on one area and they can make it great, but everything else just fucking falls apart around them. Fall apart maybe is not the term, but you get what I'm saying. And it's just like, man, I know I go back to like the 90s where it's like, okay, Choshu was booking the heavies and Liger was booking the juniors and, you know, everything was clicking. And maybe that's a little bit revisionist history. Maybe that's a little bit, you know, I'm being waxing nostalgic. But, it just doesn't seem like they can do fucking two things at once.
It's a zero-sum game with New Japan booking. Like, something else becomes good, then another division becomes shit as a result.
Right. I don't understand that. I don't understand why that has to be. But it is. No worries.
Okay, then let's see what we have got coming up. So there is a show that is coming up on the February. Let me fucking find it. I'm flagging a bit here, as you can probably tell. I'm circling the drain. Right, Sunday, February 1st, Korakuen Hall, the Young Lion Cup Final, Shomakato versus Katsu Murashima. Again, we'll preview that next week. We have special tag match, Hiromu and Finlay teaming up once again to take on Jacob Austin Young and Callum Newman. So nice to see Jacob getting a big spot there. And main event is a special tag match, Ishimori and Yota Tsuji against Akira and Jake Lee. And then February the 2nd, next day, Corican Hall. Notable matches from this show are a trio of special singles matches. Oleg Bolton against Hartley Jackson, Yoshihashi versus Zack Sabre Jr., Hiroki Goto versus Ryohei Oiwa. And we also have a full card now for the New Beginning in Osaka. So this is an Edion Arena, Wednesday, February 11th. First match, special tag match, Taiji Ishimori and Hiromu Takahashi against Jacob Austin Young and Francesco Akira. Second match, special tag match, Driller Maloney and Shingo Takagi against Great Okan and Henare. Third match, never open weight six-man tag championship. It's a rematch. Bolton, Yoshihashi and Goto against Hartley, Oiwa and Zack. Fourth match, special singles match, Gabe Kidd versus Andrade El Idolo. Fifth match, special singles match, David Finlay versus Callum Newman. Sixth match, never open weight championship, Aaron Wolf against Ren Narita. Seventh match, IWGP Tag Team Championships, Knockout Brothers against Yuya and Shota. And eighth match, IWGP Heavyweight Championship, Yotsuji versus Jake Lee. That is a sexy fucking card.
Not bad. I mean, I'll take that. Again, we're all a little cautiously optimistic on the main event. I think there are a lot of guys that this might be their last New Japan show. So I think they'll have, I don't know, I don't think they're going to go through the motions. So, yeah. Obviously, New Beginning usually is one of my favorite shows of the year. Last year, I mean, it won our show of the year last year. That's a sexy show. Again, we're cautiously optimistic for the main event, but, you know, let's fucking hitch our wagon to it. Let's go. That's a good show.
So, like, big picture thoughts after everything we talked about here. I don't know, Dan, it just feels to me that something significant has changed with the organization, with the booking of this company. Like, maybe, again, I'm just speculating here, that like the booking prior to Wrestle Kingdom had been, I don't know, like hamstrung by something. And now Handbrake is off and they can put their best foot forward and do what they want to do, push the guys they wanted to push. Maybe it was the theory about the Tanahashi retirement being put back a year and them having to tread water for a year, or there could be any number of other factors. You know, maybe it was like Takeshita obligations that he had to be booked a certain way and win a certain number of things, or maybe it was even like TV Asahi demand. Like, who knows? I'm just speculating here. But either way, the end result is the same. Like, there's a clear sense that this is a new era. It's tangible. And there's a shift in of focus away from guys like Goto and Zack, Finley and Sanada, Evil, Shingo, Gabe, Takeshita, using the veterans to get the younger guys where they need to be, guys like Ishii and Taichi and Bishamon. And like I've spoken before, like this power vacuum where Tsuji is your top guy, but there's so many other big spots up for grabs. And this pack of young, hungry, homegrown talent, Tsuji, Shota, Oiwa, Yuya, Yuto Ice, Aaron Wolf, even the foreign guys who came through the dojo, like Oleg Bolton and Oscar. And you've got these outsiders with a point to prove, guys like Jake Lee and Callum Newman, and, you know, maybe even Andrade to some extent. And they've made some really bold, quite surprising booking moves to show that the opportunities are there. Like, there is that figurative brass ring to be grabbed, like Knockout Brothers getting the strong push out of the gate, and Aaron Wolf winning the NEVER title on his debut match. And, you know, even little things like that Zane J angle, it shows that there are exciting opportunities there for people who prove themselves worthy of them. It's sink or swim. Like, there's no excuses. Opportunities are there. You have to go and grab them. You got to deliver the goods, get yourself over, or someone else is going to take that spot. It's like, for the first time in a while, it feels like a meritocracy to me.
Yeah. Yeah, there's nothing in their way. You know, at every time there was what felt like could be a reboot, you always had people in, I want to say in the way, but like you had to kind of navigate around Naito, Tanahashi, Okada, to a certain degree, Goto, Ibushi. That's not the case. Like there's an empty highway. Like it's maybe one of the more exciting times to be a fan of New Japan Pro Wrestling, because you're putting your chips on the table and going all in on this crew, right? Again, with not a lot of roadblocks in their way. Like, that can be exciting. It can be fresh. You could be on the ground floor as this thing percolates and gains momentum, and now the train is fucking barreling down the tracks. And before you know it, you're in the middle of something really fucking special and good. Have there been times in history where that's been the case? Yes, to a certain degree, but even like if you go back to, you know, the early Tanahashi years, it's not like, you know, he was, I don't want to say the chosen one, so to speak, but him, Shinsuke, Naito to a certain degree, were all those guys that they were waiting for them to kind of make the leap. You know, Tanahashi didn't just show up with his fucking hair extensions and become great. Naito, it took a long time for him to kind of find his groove. Shinsuke, his first title reign wasn't the greatest. Again, these are all things that if there was a podcast in 1999 and 2000 and it went on to, you know, in the 2005s and, you know, we would be bitching and moaning about Togi Makabe and Tenzan and all these guys that might be in the way and just fucking rocket ship these guys. And why aren't they connecting? And Naito, Jesus Christ. And, you know, let's remember back, Naito was in a tag team with fucking Yujiro, right? And trust me, Yujiro was the guy that we were like, people were like, hey, look at that. Look at that guy. How the tables turn. I'm just saying that right now we have a moment in time that people should be really fucking geared up for. Because like I said, there's not a lot of things in their way. If they just, the ball is in their hands. Again, all the names that you rattled off, the tag situation. We have a new world champion. It just feels fresh. There's a lot of space for people to grow. Now, can they do it? Well, I think we have a very talented roster. But we don't know. And I will say that's the exciting part. And that's why we do this podcast. Because let's see where we are in 2027, January 4th. And let's see where we are 2028, January 4th. And let's see where we were with G1 in between then. Like, we got a lot to be excited about. I truly believe that. And I think this roster feels it too.
Let's see you next week.
Wrestling Omakase brings you a full course meal of all of Japanese wrestling, men's and women's. Join me, a Japanese wrestling fan for over 20 years, along with a rotating cast of equally knowledgeable co-hosts, as we cover everything from New Japan and Stardom to NOAH, All Japan, DDT, Tokyo Joshi, Mari Gold, Sendai Girls, Dragon Gate, Gleet, Ice Ribbon, and even more stuff. If you're a fan of Japanese wrestling and you want coverage of the entire scene in one podcast, check us out right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network each and every week. Get us wherever you get podcasts today.